Welcome back to the Trick Podcast. I'm Fred Lambert, your host, and as usual, I'm joined by Seth Wintraub. How are you doing, Seth?
I'm well, Fred.
Yes, good. And this week, we're going to talk again about the Tesla Model 3, but a lot of big news this week about the Model 3 because, of course, last weekend was finally the, well, unveiling is not really the right word, but the release of the specs of the Model 3 performance version and the all-wheel drive dual motor version, which actually end up being very, very similar. So we're going to talk about that. But also, we had an update on the Model 3 production this week from some emails that we leaked from Elon Musk. And then we also talked about a few other things with the Model 3 and then switched to a few other vehicles that we learned about this week, especially the electric pickup truck from Rivian and another affordable EV from Honda. But starting off with the Model 3, it's been out for a week, so at this point, probably everyone know about the spec, but just a quick refresher. So no range update from the dual motor version. It gets you from 0 to 60 miles per hour a little bit faster at 4.5 seconds, and it's a $5,000 option. The front motor that is added to the rear-wheel drive motor that was already in the Model 3 is an AC induction motor, compared to the permanent magnet motor that's in the back. And for the performance version, it's pretty much the exact same powertrain. The only difference is that Tesla is like sorting out the rear-wheel drive that are more powerful, and then they do a second burn-in process to make sure that it can handle more power. They use that as the performance version powertrain, and it unlocks a little bit higher top speed at 155 instead of 140. And a 0 to 16, 3.5 instead of the 4.5 of the dual motor and the 5.2 of the regular wheel drive motor. That comes in at $78,000 without autopilot, so it's everything is equipped. You just have the $5,000 to $8,000 to add if you want autopilot. The rest is already there. And you have a few different features on it, like the carbon fiber spoiler, 20-inch performance wheels, and the interior, the white interior is going to be exclusive to the performance version for a little while until production picks up. So what was your impressions on those specs, Seth?
So I thought the all-wheel drive was going to cost less. I think many of us did. I think we kind of pinpointed it at $4,000.
Yeah.
Because when Model S had the all-wheel drive option or the two-wheel drive option, it was a $5,000 step up, and we imagined that with the smaller motors of the Model 3, it would be less expensive. I don't know if that's going to stick around. Maybe at some point Tesla drops the all-wheel drive option down to $4,000, but Tesla's problem right now isn't demand, it's cash. So, I think everything's going to be on the high side for the near term on the Model 3.
They know they can sell it at $5,000 for now, so they're doing it. But, I mean, cost-wise, it's clear that they're making a lot of money on that option because it's just one smaller AC induction motor that they're adding to the front, so a little bit more wire and stuff. But it's really minimal. So, yeah, for sure, it's a gross margin grab here.
Right. As for performance, I believe that Tesla is being a little bit conservative. I feel like they don't want to cannibalize sales of the Model S or the very high margin P100D type Model S and Model X. So they don't want to say, hey, we can get this thing under 3 seconds. But I imagine that the P version of the Model 3 will eventually get down near 3 seconds. Either via software updates or hardware updates somewhere down the road. What else?
Price-wise?
So this was something that we disliked on Twitter, and I think kind of roiled Elon Musk a little bit with the certain publications saying, you know, now the Model 3 costs $78,000.
Yeah, well, that was Bloomberg. I'll get the name then. That was Bloomberg. All right.
So yeah, that was Bloomberg. And, you know, there's other just stupid things. Like, you know, I guess we expect a little bit more from Bloomberg. That's maybe why it was so upsetting to see that those headlines come out of them.
And they had three different headlines for the same article. and yep. they were all bad, but the first one was really the worst, and they updated it to another one that was a little bit less bad, but was stock 2, and then the third one. But yeah, the first one was Tesla's $35,000 Model 3 will now cost you $78,000, which, like, I guess you could see, it's still factual, but you have to stretch the truth a lot.
Not really. I mean, well, like, the Model 3 will not cost you, I mean, it'll cost you $49,000. They could say that.
Yeah.
Because they haven't produced a $35,000 one yet. But
yeah, that's the truth. They haven't. And, of course, so, but that's not the news. If you read the actual article, is about Tesla introducing a performance version. You don't get that at all from all the headlines that they produce. So that right. was the biggest issue on that front, on the media coverage. But I agree with the sentiment that so Tesla is going on the more expensive side of the Model 3, which was supposed to be the mass market car, affordable vehicle for not from even the $35,000 car is not for everybody. It's not really an affordable vehicle, but it's a
More affordable
than what has been known for a long range electric vehicle at that point. And but at the same time, what happened this week is that Tesla started reducing the wait time for new orders for all version of the Model 3, including the standard battery pack. So it's not like we didn't already knew that the standard battery pack has been pushed. Like the standard battery pack has been pushed in January. So we knew that it's end of 2018, and of course it could be like another delay since it's Tesla, and we know that just delays are pretty common. So maybe like beginning of 2019, but I really, really doubt that Tesla would scratch the plan for the base version of the Model 3 like they did with the Model S. I think history will not repeat itself in this case.
Yeah, it's too much a part of the story. Like the $35,000 point is like the whole point of the Model 3
exactly.
is to get it into more people's hands. So, I mean, what could Tesla do to get it the price down? I mean, you know, they've never really said, well, you know, they have the long range and the medium range. They could throw, you know, a few less batteries in the short, you know, in the $35,000.
I don't think they have two. I don't think they have two. I think they can pretty much get the car down to $35,000 cost.
Once production is smooth.
Yeah, once you get to 5,000 and more, you can probably reach a 35,000 mark. So you don't make any money on the base version, but like most people order options, and then
right.
then the higher version of the car, like for $78,000 for the performance version, is very expensive. That's what I wrote in one of my articles about it, because like I said before, I was looking for the all-wheel drive version or the performance version. I wasn't necessarily looking for a performance car, but I mean, if it's a Model 3, just for the fun of it, I want to check it out. But now I still want to have like value for my money, and there's a big difference between like if you go just order the all-wheel drive version standard and even the without autopilot, and you go to performance autopilot, there's like a $24,000 difference between those two cars.
Yeah, and I mean, you don't get much for that money.
Yeah, what do you get for that $24,000?
Carbon fiber.
Yeah, you get that carbon fiber supporter, which I already
probably
got on my
the brake
S.
calipers. The colored brake calipers.
They didn't even confirm that the red brake calipers. They haven't confirmed that.
They didn't
that.
Confirm it, but.
And at one point, it was an aftermarket add-on, so maybe they're going to charge you for that, too. I'm not sure.
Right.
So the carbon fiber spoiler, you get that for that $24,000, which I have already on the Model S, and I don't like. I don't like the look of it. And at first, I heard from Tesla at first that the production will not even ship with the carbon fiber. It's going to be added at the service center after. So they're not even ready to get that into production.
Come on.
Just a
top speed of 155, I guess. If you're going to go 155 instead of 140, is that the top speed of the?
Yeah, 140 to 155. You get right. that. You get the 1 second, but the 1 second is pretty much going to be software at this point, right? From the all-wheel drive to the because of the fact that the powertrain doesn't change much, instead of being rated higher based on sorting all the different motors. The 20-inch wheels, performance wheels, that's valuable. I would certainly prefer 20-inch wheels than 19 inches or the standard 18. So that I think is like a few thousand out of the 24,000 that's ordered. I don't care about the white interior that much. Like I probably would order it black. So it's a hard sell, that $24,000. I haven't said no yet because they haven't opened the performance and all-wheel drive configurator in Canada, so I haven't pulled the trigger on either one of them. But right now, once they open it, I'm thinking more all-wheel drive at this point.
Yeah, I would probably do that as well. You know, I don't often need to go 155 miles per hour. The speed is fine. Range is the same. It'd be nice if they threw some extra batteries in there or something just to make it, you know, that $1,000 extra money gets you something or tangible.
Or a higher performance rated, just a higher power output rear-wheel drive motor like they did with the Model S. That would have made more sense to me, but I guess they're not looking. It looks like a gross margin grab again, which, again, looks good for the standard battery pack version.
Yep.
If they are pushing to get more money out of that performance version, which print the people is going to buy anyway, like Tesla as like a core user base, so at least 10,000 people that would buy any performance car that comes out of Tesla. So
right.
There's going to be plenty of people that's going to buy the performance version of Model 3 at Tesla. It's going to come out almost like $85,000 and more, like with the autopilot. Most people's going to order it with the autopilot. And to your point that you think that there's going to be a little bit more power at some point out of the vehicle, Elon said just a few days after unveiling the specs, that the version might offer a bigger power output. Like he thinks that he can still get some more out of that Model 3 powertrain, which would make sense.
Yeah, I mean, the Model 3 is already testing above its specs, just the rear version. So yeah. I imagine all the specs are a little bit padded.
Though we saw that this week, like a few owners comment that they think that Tesla slowed down the car, which we haven't been able to confirm at all. And it seems more like the misperception from a few owners, maybe, or maybe it's true. We don't know. But like at the same time, what happens is that the the claim is actually that there'd be a software update that slowed down their vehicles. But if you look at the Model 3 0 to 60 was rated by some reviewers before it get under 5 seconds, and that came out at the same time as a Consumer Report that did their review, and they came out at 5.3, I think, or 5.2. They came out at pretty much what Tesla was advertising. So people linked that to the fact that they felt that their own car now was being was slower. We're looking into it, but at that point it's not confirmed at all. But it will make sense if you're trying to differentiate more than the all-wheel drive version and the performance version. But what came out just after the release of the of those specs was that Tesla updated all its timelines for the deliveries of new Model 3 in the U.S. for new orders or for new reservation, I should say. Because if you don't have a reservation at all, like Tesla still have 450,000 reservations, something like that. If you're not in those 450,000, you saw the Model 3 for the first time, your neighbor just got one, and you looked at it, and I want that too. And the thought process right now was that if you want to do that, you had to wait almost a year and a half to get on the back of that 450,000 people line. But in the U.S., they still updated the timeline, and they cut them all in half. So technically, you could get within 6 months, you could get the version that is currently in production, so the long-range battery pack with a rear-wheel drive motor. You could get that in 6 to 9 months, even if you're not in the line, even if you're not an owner. So that's big news.
I feel like that's optimistic.
Yeah?
Yeah. But maybe this version...
That's not even true. So sorry, 4 to 6 months. You said that 6 to 9 was the optimistic. It's 4 to 6 for that version.
So yeah, that's... very optimistic. The reason I think that maybe they can get there is that fewer people are ordering the 310 mile version or picking them up because they're the new 220 mile version, which is way less expensive. The $35,000 version is coming right around the corner, relatively speaking. So fewer people are like, oh, I got to get it now. They're like, okay, I can wait, 6 months.
Well, I've been saying for a while now that I was surprised that Tesla was even able to get that. Like, right now, that's our next news, but right now Tesla is at 3,500 vehicles per week production. So I was surprised that Tesla couldn't even produce those cars and deliver them with just the Model 3 long-range rear-wheel drive. So I think what this is showing is that they have nailed down right now the production for this particular configuration of the vehicle, and they want more orders for it, and there's just not as many people within the current backlog of 450,000 people that want that particular configurations. I think it makes sense.
There might be a point at the end of the year where if you want a Model 3 and you're willing to pay $50,000 for it, you might be able to get it really quick, relatively quick, like within a few months. So let's say December, you want a Model 3. The $35,000 one is right around the corner or, coming up. But you've got $50,000 and you say, well, I might as well just get the more expensive one rather than wait a year and a half for the $35,000 one. I think that's the situation that Tesla's going to be in 6 months.
Yeah, that makes sense. And right now, they want to have a better idea of what's going to be the mix of configuration.
Mm-hmm.
So that they can plan for the production appropriately. I think that's what it's saying right now. But also with that news, we got the confirmation from Tesla that they told some owners that were invited to, that some reservation holder that were invited to configure in the last batch of invitations, that they're going to be some delays. And their excuse for it was that the take rate for orders in the last batch was much higher than they anticipated. So that created a delay. But a little bit skeptical on my side. I think some of those owner, and it looked like a few of them went from a May delivery to a June delivery, but a lot of them too went from a May delivery to a July delivery, which brings them from Q2 to Q3. And we know what that means. If Tesla pushed some deliveries in Q3 and they hit the 200,000 vehicle delivered in the US a quarter later, just early in Q3 instead of Q2, late in Q2, then they get a full more quarter of a full tax credit for U.S. Buyers, which makes a big difference. Millions.
We think that there's not going to be a lot of deliveries for the rest of June in the U.S.
Unless they have it planned out, like the maybe that before those delays, they thought that they were going to hit the 200,000 in early in Q3. Then that messed them up a little bit. Like the last batch, there were too many people in the U.S. that brought the order. So now they are adjusting again, like something like that. So it's not necessarily that they didn't see it coming. They just like missed their calculation or something like that.
Right. And by the way, we've asked Tesla about this, and they've made absolutely no mention of the 200,000. In fact, they kind of poo-pooed the whole idea that they might be waiting on deliveries, which I guess that's what public relations is.
Yeah, they cannot say it out loud, because as soon as they confirm it, they say, yeah, we're doing that to optimize people getting the full tax credit. Then all the headlines are going to be, Tesla is trying to squeeze more money out of public taxpayers to the rich people that are buying the cars. And because that's always been the headlines anyway.
Should we talk at all about Elon's little tirade, his Twitter accusations towards the media?
It's rant against the media. If you want to, I didn't mind it as much as you did, maybe.
I just felt like it was a bad strategy. And I hate to say this because typically it would sound weird, but it felt very Trump-like. It felt like, clearly, he's on a different side of most issues as Trump, but like the railing on the media, like I don't want to say that Elon has thin skin, but he gets hyper upset about things, and it feels like it's behind the scenes things that we don't even know about, more than, you know, a bad headline or something silly. You know, for instance, on the last conference call, you know, a couple of analysts, he just basically told to go screw themselves.
You called them boneheaded.
Right. I mean, it was just like, I don't know. Maybe it's his new girlfriend.
No, I mean, the Trump thing, like everybody went to the Trump thing. He's just like Trump. Is just like Trump. Like Trump didn't invent the distrust of media. He just popularized it and made it a big thing. But like the media, people distrusted the media way before Trump.
Right. So I guess what upsets me about the whole situation is that he's in a way. So, you know, clearly I think Elon's great and I don't think Trump is great. He's kind of vindicating Trump a little bit by saying, you know, this is why he got elected. This is, you know, nobody trusts the media, which, you know, technically we're a part of.
I think we're judging it too fast. I think Elon had a big PR issue with his rant. He didn't present his idea the right way, but I think his idea is good. Because unlike Trump, who just says that every media that doesn't agree with him is fake news and
yeah,
and stuff like that. Elon's project, if you don't know, guys, it's now going to be called Pravda, instead of Pravda, and it's going to be a ranking system to try to analyze and judge specific media outlets, journalists, and editors on their accuracy and their trustworthiness. And I don't know all the factors yet. But anyway, my main problem with it is that it could fail completely. It could just not be accurate, the system. But assuming that he finds a way, he didn't exactly explain how it's going to work. Like the only thing he said is that it's going to be a ranking system based on vote from the public. Some vote is going to be public and others going to be anonymous, and there's going to be a way to figure out if someone used votes or not. So it's not clear at this point. But let's assume that he finds a way to make it work. Then if it works, then after that, like, it's a good thing for the media, because you know who to trust and who not to trust. And then if a media that is considered trustworthy within the ranking system, and that particular media ends up being critical of Musk or Trump, for example, then like it becomes harder to call that media fake news or not true if you have that backing for it. I mean, I'm being very optimistic here because that's assuming that the ranking system works, which I think is going to be extremely difficult to achieve. Like, I don't see. I had the same idea a few years back, and where it didn't work, it's on the execution. Like, I tried to figure out how could you make it work with the reliable. I couldn't really find a way. But Elon Musk is a lot more intelligent than me, so maybe he's gonna find a way.
Well, we kind of did something on 9to5 Mac with analysts. We kind of just analysts and other, you know, websites. Whether, you know, when they would predict something, we would mark, you know, good or bad. And there's a couple sites out there that do that based on editors and journalists. I can't remember the name of them, but, you know, they're out there. There's so much gray area. Like, you know, is a story 100% true or 100% false? Rarely. Usually they're 10 to 90% true and false. Like who's going to make the judgments? Everybody's going to argue over. It's just, there's a lot of ambiguity, I mean, this is something that would take a lot of time. People would get in fights over it. Just to me, it seems like a waste of his time specifically, but you know, this has been tried before. You know, clearly he's a very smart man. Maybe he can come up with a way to do it. I just feel like his brains and his time could be utilized better.
Yeah, well, at the same time, I see, to play devil's advocate here, I see where it plays into his missions, though, because if you, and we experience this with Tesla and with electric vehicles all the time, the media is misreporting on electric vehicles and on Tesla, and the way they skew things, just like what we talked about, the Bloomberg headlines earlier. That thing's has a big impact. I see it every day when I talk to people that are not as informed as our readers. Because, like, if we live in the electric bubble with, like, our core readers and listener, that those people are extremely well informed about electric. I know that I'm patting myself on the back here since we're the people informing them. But, like, even if we weren't that good at reporting, it's just with the amount of information that goes through about Tesla and electric vehicles, you form your own opinions without our opinion section anyway. So even without that, you have all the information, so you know. But if you go outside the very core, like, EV community fans, how many times did you hear, like, Tesla going bankrupt, so what are you doing driving Tesla? You're not going to be able to get service because I hear that they're going bankrupt, just because a few, like, CNBC took a comment from an analyst, or they had Jim Chanos on, and Jim Chanos said that Tesla's the next Enron or something like that. So those things just have a huge impact. So if you're Elon Musk, if you're Tesla, and you're trying to figure out a way to counter that, and so far the only way Tesla had to counter that was the PR team at Tesla, and as you know, like, there, it's not a big PR team at all. Like, it has become bigger in the last few years, and last year especially. But, like, at some point, it was two people trying to correct 200 articles per day or something like that. Now it's like 600 articles per day, and they're maybe like three times the size of the team, maybe a little bit more than that. But whatever, it just it doesn't work at all. So it looks like Elon is trying to figure out, like, another way to attack the problem. But, like I said, like, yeah, it's the execution that's going to make the difference, I think.
All right, yeah. All right. So that's our beef on the Twitter rant. And he kind of extended it. He kind of attacked some specific people, like the Verge writer, something.
Yeah, the Verge, I don't know, but... like, the big thing I couldn't believe from the thread was how many, like, journalists, because a bunch of journalists took it very personal, and yep, as if they were, Elon was especially talking about them. And so I didn't take it personal at all when they, because I consider myself a blogger, and I don't care about the journalist title or anything like that. I admit that I'm biased, and, like, everybody's biased, and if you don't admit it, like, just it's in order. But the big thing, like, the journalists that were the most affected by it, they even tried to make it sound like Elon didn't even know that what Pravda was. Like, they thought that naming the publication or the rating system or whatever, Pravda, wasn't a joke. He just thought it was a cool name or what? Like, he didn't know that it was like a big propaganda machine. And really, yeah, serious journalists, like the people at the Wall Street Journals and all, BuzzFeed and a bunch of publication. Like, so you didn't know that Pravda was propaganda? Of course, Elon was being ironic. It was a satire. But
mm-hmm.
I was blown away. Like, did he really think that, or is just like they were trying to frame it in a way that make Elon look bad, and that's the problem again.
But here's what I see happening, and you know, I think this has been a problem in the past with other companies, is he's probably not going to go through with this rating Pravda thing.
He already bought the website.
I know he bought the website like in October, but I feel like it probably isn't going to amount to much. But in the meantime, he's pissed off, like, the, you know, the lion's share of the journalism community, which, you know, like it or not, has the keys to the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal and lots of the places where normals get news. So
normals.
Right. So, you know, it's going to be like, they're not, he's not going to get the coverage he wants by being a, you know, this kind of behavior. And I think, you know, like, look at, you know, the kind of behavior, or sorry, the kind of coverage Trump gets on Washington Post and New York Times. It's like, he clearly deserves it, in my opinion, but his tactics aren't working, or Trump's tactics aren't working. I don't think they're going to work for Elon either. Like, I think calling out the media, you know, and I don't know what gets
pretty easily.
I don't know what specifically pissed him off as much as it did, but like it. I mean, what do you think was the?
Well, like I said, I think what I was talking about, like, people coming up and saying, like, all right, Tesla's going bankrupt. When are you going to service your car? And Model 3 is delayed. Like, no one's going to, you're going to buy a Model 3 for $35,000. And all those stuff like that, like, they have a natural impact on people. And I think Elon knows that, and that's what's triggering him. Like, he gets upset about it.
But it's not one specific thing.
The specific thing, the very one that I think blew the fuse, was the series of reveal articles.
Oh, right.
About the workers, the working conditions at Fremont and stuff like that.
Which
that
is weird, because reveal is a, it's not funded by, I mean, it's funded by a bunch of foundations, not...
Yeah, but I think Reveal, they got. I think they themselves, like, they saw a story that was interesting, and they didn't look too much into the fact that were their sources, and their sources were all former employees at Tesla that were union activists, and they blamed their being fired as a union activist, even though you can trace them all back to performance issues and stuff like that. But
I know. But I feel like I just, you know, let it go. Like, that's you know, address the issues, but, like, you know, there's going to be bad stories about every company. Like, that's, you're trying to, I mean, I look at Apple and Google, been covering them for 10 years. There's always the person or the publication that likes to stir the, you know, get the page views by doing a negative, you know, version, you know, a negative take on whatever the news is. That's just normal. Like, that happens. I don't understand why. I mean, so this is something I kind of followed a Twitter thread on. Tesla gets a lot of its marketing done because Elon stays in the news. Mm-hmm. So everybody knows about Tesla. Like, even, you know, for a small company.
Oh, are you going conspiracy on me right now?
I'm not going to go conspiracy. I'm just going to say that Tesla, I don't want to say owes the media. I just think Tesla so far has gotten more, like, outsized coverage for the size of the company it is, mm-hmm. which I think it, you know, we're obviously covering it and we're big Tesla fans. I think that's a good thing. I don't think, I don't know if Elon's going to the bank on that the right way, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. Like, he should just kind of let things be up and down.
Instead, you mean, like, it's working?
It's working. It's clearly working. Yeah. You know, Tesla, everybody knows about Tesla. They don't spend any money on ads.
Yeah, but like I said, like, everybody knows about Tesla, true, but does everybody has the right, like, view on it? Like, do they see the potential for it? Like, and I would like to know, like, in the general public, because our perception is skewed because we are very involved in the EV community. Everybody we know is involved, and
we're very biased.
Yeah, so it's difficult to say. Maybe in the mainstream, the view is actually extremely negative. I don't think it's the case, but I think there's, like, a significant portion of the population that don't have the right view of Tesla. Like, they really think that it's going bankrupt. They really think that Model 3 is going to be $35,000. They think that the cars are catching on fire all the time, that the autopilot is killing everyone. I think there's a large part of the population that sees it like that, which is, of course, not the case.
Right. I mean, just between
you and the thing, I don't know how many thousands of miles that.
But I almost see, like, for instance, the Tesla crashes and catching on fire every day stories. That's a symptom of Tesla being in the news every day and everybody wanting to know about Tesla. So. Yeah. You know, you're a publisher of New York Times, and you're like, we need to get pages up to make our numbers for the month. what do people want to hear about? They want to hear about Tesla. Do we have any, you know, smart takes on Tesla? Do we have any new information? No. But let's pick up some crashes, because all we have to do is do a Google search and we'll find some crashes, and that'll be our Tesla stories, and everybody will click on it. And that's just how it works. You know, I don't think you can, I mean, they're not true. What you choose to cover is, it can wildly change people's point of views, what you choose to cover and what you choose to admit, but it's not true or false. You can't, you know, you can't gauge that being true or not true. Like, clearly Teslas do get in accidents and do catch on fire every once in a while. By covering it, you're not lying. You're just over-covering something.
Yeah. Just like you did with Trump during the campaign, over-covered him against the other candidate. But we're going to move on now and I think we've said enough about
the subject. Yeah, that's enough.
But we're going to stay on the Model 3, though, just for a little bit longer, because this news that came out today plays right into what we were saying earlier about that Tesla optimizing the Model 3 deliveries for the tax credit in the U.S. because a massive shipment, and I sometimes I overuse the word massive, but I think this one is pretty massive shipment for the Model 3 and for Canada, because the shipment went to Canada in Toronto, and a big parking lot was spotted, maybe up to 1,000 Model 3. At least like over 500 easily, but maybe up to 1,000. That was outside of Toronto, and on top of it, plenty of are already at the Toronto. There's a few stores in Toronto, a few stores in service center already there being prepped for deliveries. And I also hear that a few hundred more are going to Montreal to test the Montreal. So deliveries in Canada are ramping up this week in a big, big way. And if you link that to, like we said, the deliveries being delayed to July in the U.S., I think it plays right into Tesla's optimization delivery optimization plan.
Right. So let's say Tesla hits, assuming Tesla hits 200,000 in Q3. They have the rest of the Q3 and then two more quarters after that?
No, one more. One more quarter plus the quarter in which you hit the 200,000 mark.
Okay, so that means everything in 2018 will be $7,500 cash back for, or tax credit for American U.S. citizens.
Correct. If you take your delivery by the end of the year.
Starting in 2019, you get two quarters of $3,750 back.
Yes.
And then two more quarters of 17 whatever.
Yeah, so there's going to be tax credit throughout the entire 2019, but half and a quarter of what is offered, what is going to be, looks like it's going to be offered throughout the entire 2018 year. So it's pretty good. Like, it's going to be sooner than GM and Nissan with the Leaf and whatever other EVs that are going to come out by the time that their own tax credit run out. But, I mean, the difference is the production rate that you are at when you hit that mark. And it looks like Tesla is going to be at over 5,000 when they hit that 200,000 delivery. So they're gonna be able to deliver a ton of cars for people that have that that can have that 70, because also not everyone can have that $7,500 tax credit. But if you can.
Basically every car that they can get out in 2018 will get a $7,500 tax credit.
In the U.S., yeah.
In the U.S.
So that's good. Another thing. Yeah, because they could, technically they should start deliveries in Europe too in 2000, by the end of the year. So are they going to like push that back and focus the deliveries in the U.S.? Because I'm sure they can deliver like everything they can make in the U.S. if people are focused on the difference. Because it's worth a lot of money. Like Model 3.
$3,750.
Yeah. Like that's a few options that if you think about buying a Model 3 or pretty much any midsize sedan in the next year or two, then you're gonna want to have the Model 3 by the end of the year, because that means like a few options for free. It's like a few self-driving for free, even though you won't get it at that time. But it's something to think about for sure.
Yeah, and then, of course, We don't know for sure if it's third quarter, but that's kind of what we're thinking.
We don't know for sure, but like I'm 99% sure at this point that Tesla is doing it for that. Last thing about the Model 3 this week, it's going to be about the Consumer Report came out with their sort of review of the Model 3. And like the article that they came out with is that they are not recommending the Model 3. So, of course, it made all the headlines because a lot of people value, apparently, a Consumer Report's opinion. But a few interesting things, I think one interesting thing came out of the report, because why they didn't give the recommendation, there's a few things. There was the wind noise, which I couldn't get my head around because I think the Model 3 is like three times quieter than my Model S. There was the screen, which I think is basically an opinion. It's just,
yeah, you know what you're getting. There's no surprises there.
Yeah, it's not like you take delivery on Model 3. Hey, what? I have to do everything on my touchscreen? Yeah, you do. And you get used to it so fast that it doesn't really matter. But apparently Consumer Report didn't get used to it, so they take out a few points for that. But the third thing, and we have to give credit to Consumer Report for that, because actually looks like they found a problem, is with the braking test. They did a braking test and they find some inconsistencies with the average stopping distance, which came to 152 feet.
From 60 to 0, which is kind of high, like in the truck range, not the car range.
Yes and no. If you look at the difference with they tested, like car and driver tested the BMW i3, Volkswagen e-Golf, like they said, a bunch of other EVs, which are about the same weight, or a little bit heavier in some cases. The Ioniq Electric got 194. That's insane.
The reason why is a couple. One is EVs are heavy. Two is they have low rolling resistance tires to get that extra range. So you've got kind of like for braking, for high speed braking, you've got kind of like a perfect storm of bad news.
Yeah.
So the fact that the Model 3 is kind of competing with the BMWs and Mercedes at all is already impressive. I think the big problem was that it was inconsistent. So
that was a problem. That was a problem.
So, Car and Driver, I think, got Motor Trend got 119 feet. Car and Driver got, with a slightly different model with the bigger wheels, got 130 feet, I think. So, Consumer Reports noted that they had a 130 foot one, which is kind of where other cars are in the Model 3 class, the BMWs.
And Tesla's own average was 133.
Right. So that's kind of where they kind of plan to be. And having 20 extra feet to get to 150 or wherever, something was wrong. And so I have actually some anecdotal experience here. The other day I was traveling around 45, 50 miles per hour. And a car pulled out just for no reason at all, and I just slammed on the brakes, and the deet 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 was happening.
Yeah.
And I was like, "Whoa, that did not stop as quick as I had thought it was going to stop." And it felt like I pushed down on the brakes, and then a second later, the brakes kicked in. So I wonder if there is actually some software that's not behaving right. In current. I did stop. I didn't hit anything. Yeah. But I wonder if there's something that could be optimized a little bit there.
Yeah. So what happened is that we posted an article about it based on Consumer Reports finding. Tesla commented on it, and their comments were more like dismissing at first. But then they said that they can actually update the car with over the air update. Then Elon responded to our article on Twitter, saying at first he was saying it was strange, but they were going to look into it because he himself thought that they had a pretty good stopping distance. And then later on, he commented on it again, saying that they found some issue in the software, and they're going to send an update in the next few days. But to make it clear, you should have a pretty good stopping distance right now, but they found some software that could create some inconsistencies between different instances of stopping the vehicle at somewhat high speed. So now it's going to be more consistent with the update, which I think can come as soon as this weekend, I think, or something like that they said. We're going to update you on that once it's...
Yeah, and I always, because it's an electric car, I always wonder if they're like, you know, they're messing around with the brakes to try to get more regenerative power or something like that. So there, you know, there is some more complexity there.
Yeah, and also, like, my thing was also that... Consumer Report, were they testing it with the standard or the regenerative braking or the low one? Because if you look at their standards for testing braking for EVs, they made it sound like they were using only the low regen, which I think can make a difference.
Right. That's a good point.
It shouldn't make a difference technically if you slam the brake, which is what you do in a 60 to zero test. But if there was a problem with the software, that could be the difference. Like,
I mean, I feel like that's one of the like high level problems with Consumer Reports is that they're not EV experts.
No,
they're not. They think that any EV person that like any EV person you've ever met in your whole life, as long as they've been in the car for a little while, they use regenerative braking. Like, it's 100%. So the fact that they're even testing it without regen braking on, I mean,
low one for Tesla.
Yeah, but, so it's like they're not really in the game.
No, they're not.
I imagine like if you lent the car to somebody who had never used an EV before, then you could. I mean, that's kind of why I feel like that's even available. But like for the Chevy Bolt, I think putting the regen on at all is like insane, and the fact that it's the default is really annoying.
Well, I hear different things about that. Like when I was testing the Nissan Leaf last month, or when did I do that? Like last
the
month.
The one pedal.
Not just the one pedal. Like the you have the one pedal, but you have also two different regen settings. You have two different regions. You have the pedal, and they said that the higher regen give you was it the higher regen or the pedal? Maybe I'm confusing, but they said that they did some tests with it, and you get lower efficiency for long distance driving if you use the higher regen settings.
Huh. I wonder if that's because you're regening, you do lose some power in the process of turning kinetic energy into electricity,
mm-hmm.
and then putting it back. I wonder if just coasting is. I don't know.
It doesn't make much sense to me unless your regen, like you said, is really inefficient in doing that in transferring from kinetic to electricity. But like then that's your problem. I want my regen. I want to get that electricity back. I don't want to use my
pads. And the Bolt has two different things as well. It's got the paddle and I use the paddle, but none of the other people in my family use the paddle. So maybe that's an example of not using full regen that you can.
Well, do they drive it as much? Because I got the Bolt for a week, and after a day, I was in love with the paddle.
Great. Same. But they drive it all the time. I don't know. Oh, yeah.
That's weird.
Yeah, my wife is like, why do you use the paddle? Like, what is the paddle for? And I'm like, I can't believe you're not even... So maybe I'm wrong about these things.
Yeah. Or maybe you didn't explain it right enough, or like maybe it's your fault.
I love the paddle. Like you can come to a complete stop at a stop sign quickly.
Yeah. Model Y, we had a little update on Model Y this week about the timing. Elon said March 15 for the unveiling.
Ides of March.
Yeah, Ides of March. So that was weird, like the way he said it, but it looks like that's going to be the date for now, at least. Because the way he said it is that he said March 15th, and he said he just made it up because of the Ides of March. It sounded cool.
Yeah, I don't know how reliable that... I mean, like, but I feel
said,
like...
consider it real right after. He said consider it real.
Yeah, but I think it's so far out right now that...
Yeah.
It could be the beginning of... could be February, it could be...
I'm sure they haven't reserved a venue or anything yet.
Right.
It's not. They haven't set out a date with
But we already bought our hotel room, so I don't know what that means.
Yeah, we don't know yet where we're going to be in March, but it looks like we might be in Fremont or Los Angeles. Last thing about Tesla this week that we're going to talk about real quick. It's another question of timing, and it's an exciting one, and it's a lot sooner than the Model Y 2. Supercharger V3. The new, more powerful supercharger would be coming as soon as late this summer, said Elon.
And what's that going to have?
That's going to have between 200 and 250 kilowatt of powers, which is about twice with the Powerwall, the supercharger, which is the V2. There's some V1 still on the market.
Are you going to need a different port on your car?
Or that's a big question. So my thing, and I've been saying it for a while, when the V3 comes, I wouldn't be surprised if we see an update coming to Tesla's vehicles. So late this summer, we were talking about maybe a Model S and X refresh this year. Wouldn't be surprised if it matches the release of the V3. Makes sense, because I'm not sure that maybe it happens before and they just don't say anything about it, unveil the V3, and then on the unveiling of the V3 they say, hey, by the way, if you bought a car in the last 6 months, you can use that 250 kilowatt charge rate.
So wait, it's just basically double then, right?
Well, I mean, that, like, if we talk highest possible charge rate, we've seen Model S, Model X, even like Model 3 getting 120 kilowatts of charge rate. So 250 would be more than double, 200 would be less than double. But also, there's always a question. So how much can you maintain that charge rate throughout the charging cycle? Because
right. It
makes a big difference. That 120 right now, you don't maintain that for long.
So my prediction is that they double the voltage from 400 to 800 volts. Because you can still get up, you know, once you get to like 1 megavolt is when you start arcing. So I think there's still some room. They can double the voltage. Then they don't need to update the cabling or the stuff at all, because you need the thicker cables and the different interface, because for amperage changes. If you get over, I think they're 300, 400 amps now.
Yeah.
So my prediction is that V3 will be 800 volt. And that kind of matches up with what Volkswagen is doing.
Yeah.
Porsche's
system is 800, yeah.
So.
Now we have still a few minutes to talk about other things in Tesla, which is pretty rare. Vivian, we've talked about Vivian before, because when they bought the whole Mitsubishi plant in Illinois. So that was a shuttered plant for a while now. And Rivian is a startup that was started by MIT graduate, and they hired a bunch of engineers and executives from legacy automakers, and they are working on a whole new platform for electric vehicles, which looks a lot what we're used to at this point since Tesla the skateboard type of platform that Tesla popularized. And we reported earlier this year that they're going to build electric pickup trucks and SUVs on the same platform, but we didn't know much about it other than they're going to be long-range vehicle and they're going to be all electric. But they invited Engadget to their headquarters this week, and they gave them a bunch of interesting specs about the vehicles. So for the pickup trucks, well, Engadget wasn't great about differentiating the spec between the two. They only talked about the pickup truck, then they talked about the SUVs. But since they did say that they shared 91% of the components, so it looks like it's going to be pretty similar vehicles with just different form factors for the pickup truck and the SUV.
Yeah, so, just the shell, really.
Yeah, really the shell. So I assume that the spec that they give is like for both the pickup truck and the SUV, but that's a bit speculative at this point. They talked about a range of 200 miles on the 80 kilowatt hour pack, up to 450 miles on the highest energy capacity battery pack, which they didn't say what was that energy capacity, but it has to be pretty insane for 450 miles.
Yeah, I mean, that's approaching 200 kilowatt hours.
Yeah, and I mean, you're talking about big pickup truck here or SUV, so even 80 kilowatt hour on 200 miles on 80 kilowatt hour on a pickup truck, I'm skeptical about that. It's a U.S. company, so they should be talking about EPA rating here.
I'm sure, yeah.
Yeah, so that was, I'm a little bit skeptical about that. I mean, if they can do it, which a crazy efficient pickup, congrats. But it's gonna be crazy efficient for a pickup truck. That's Zoe, but I mean, like electric vehicle wise, it's even for just like an electric powertrain, it's pretty impressive. 200 miles on an 80 kilowatt hour pack for a vehicle that size. Pricing for that 200 miles, they're talking about a starting price at around $50,000, up to $90,000 for the 450-mile version.
Also optimistic. Seems like a pretty good price for a 200-mile pickup truck, electric pickup truck.
Yeah. I mean, $50,000 is competitive with like a F-150 and pickup of that size. Then acceleration. So, of course, it's going to be crazy fast for pilots. He says that the top version could do 0 to 60 in 2.8, which is getting pretty close to it's faster than Model X P100D. It's pretty much the same speed up, pretty close to a Model S P100D, and base version would go about 5 seconds, which is also pretty fast. They're talking about having autonomous driving level 3, which is the level that basically it ends off, but
yeah,
the driver is still the backup system, so you still have to be vigilant.
I don't see that happening.
Yeah, I mean, developing, like, they have 350 employees. They have some big financial backing. So, like, they're not, like, a ridiculously small startup. It's still a significant size startup. But developing a whole new vehicle platform, a whole battery pack, and autonomous driving, unless they get, like, a partner or something, but which I think they will. Go ahead.
And we've given them props in the past for actually getting the factory, you know, prototypes before all the flashy, like, you know,
focusing on manufacturing instead of
like what a responsible company should do.
Yeah, and of course, the difference is the comparison is with like the Fisker II maybe, but the Faraday Future and the Lucid Motors that. Did big marketing push, big unveilings of vehicles and stuff way before having any manufacturing capacity.
Yeah, and then like starting to bulldoze, some land, just
moving some dirt around and calling it a day. Right. But those cars should be available at the LA Auto Show, which I think we should go this year. Seth. We should be probably at the LA Auto Show this year.
All right, and
there's going to be a lot of EVs, I think.
LA is fun anyway.
Yeah, the way it's framing up to be in the. We got the invite from Audi too. I think it's gonna be around the same time.
Is that September?
September or October? Really, at the Auto Show. I think it's September. If it's September, it's the same time at the Audi thing. So Audi's gonna be unveiling their car too, their electric Quattro. But that's the unveiling this year. The production is aimed for 2020, so they're still gonna be unveiling the car before production. But everybody knows that. And yeah, I just talked. They couldn't take any pictures, of course, but they talked about a little bit about the design of the pickup truck, which I didn't get at all because what they said it looked like the Honda Ridgeline, which is pretty boring looking pickup truck. But then he said it's ripped straight out of Halo, which of course, if you're a Halo gamer.
Yeah, it's hard to mesh those
talk.
Two.
Like the war talk from Halo, guys, if you know about it. It looks nothing like on the Ridgeline. So I don't know where you got that from. But I'm more
looking
forward.
It'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, I'm more looking forward for a war talk than for a Honda Ridgeline electric. Don't want a Honda Ridgeline electric.
Speaking of Honda.
Yeah, Honda too had their AV announcement this week. Well, it's not an announcement. It came out of a report from Nike. Apparently Nike is really connected with Contemporary Amperex Technology, also known as CATL, which if you've been following electric for a while, we've been reporting on them a lot because they are rapidly growing battery manufacturer in China. Already have over 24 gigawatt hour, I think, of production capacity, and they are looking to add another gigafactory to their lineup and double that by the end of the decade. So they are growing at a credible rate. And they've been signing up a ton of contracts lately. And apparently they just partnered up with Honda to make a new EV, affordable EV based on the Fit. So it's not necessarily going to be an electric Fit because there was an electric Fit before, like a very boring compliance car that they sold for a while. I think it's discontinued now, right? I think.
I mean, they still sell Fit internal combustion, which sadly, they're not great cars.
They were really, really cheap cars, but they said that they could do it for 2 million yen, which is $18,000 approximately, which would be pretty good still.
Especially with a tax credit.
Yeah, if you get tax credit too, because they're talking about yen right now, but they're talking about a global launch, so the vehicles would be like made in China and exported, which can be done, but hasn't been really popular. Volvo is doing it now, so more people are doing it, but apparently Honda one gets on board. And you're talking about 100,000 units per year.
Hey, that's great.
It's not Model 3 or anything, but I mean, can you count how many vehicle programs right now are over 100,000 per year? Electric vehicles program, there are not that many. I mean, there are a few in China, though. There are a few in China, but outside of China, that like this, the Leaf. Is the Leaf even 100,000 now? They aim it to be.
Yeah, with, maybe globally.
Yeah, globally with the next gen and how it's going to be. Then that's pretty much it, I think. Like, there's not.
Yeah, the Bolt's not hitting 100,000.
No.
Not that the band doesn't exist.
Yeah. I mean,
Chevy's just not making that many.
We reported last week that they're back ordered for over a year in Canada. Like, they're limiting the availability everywhere because, of course, they are focusing on the compliance EV mandate states. But that's true. That's pretty much it for this week, guys. Thanks a lot for tuning in and listening to the Electric Podcast. Thanks a lot to our Patreon supporters. We're appealing a lot. You can go to patreon.com/electric to support us and get some electric gear. And thanks for subscribing. You can subscribe to our iTunes and to our Stitcher and TuneIn if you're listening in your Tesla right now. And you can leave us a review on all those apps. It helps us do a lot. And we're going to see you next week. Bye-bye.